Last year, a group of high schoolers put on formal wear, walked into a hotel ballroom in Texas, and basically walked out having powered a $16.2 million community engine.
Which is just, I mean, it's a staggering number when you really think about it.
It really is because, when you hear the phrase Cinderella ball, you probably picture something out of a mid-century fairy tale, right? Like tiaras, massive gowns.
Maybe a glass slipper or two.
Exactly. It sounds like a total relic from a bygone era. But today, we are taking a duck dive into the source material for the 66th annual Cinderella Cherry Ball.
Which is happening on April 4th, 2026, at the Loews Arlington Hotel.
Right. And our mission today is to look at how a so-called Cinderella ball is actually, well, one of the most ruthless, effective philanthropic incubators in the country.
Yeah, the contrast between the aesthetic of the event and the actual output is what makes this so fascinating. We are unpacking the program for an event that has raised, and I want to get this exactly right from the source, $16,235,735.68 for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Tarrant County.
The 68 cents is my favorite part of that. It just shows how meticulous this all is.
Right. So our goal for this deep dive into the source material is to deconstruct the mechanics of this operation. We want to move past the cocktail hour and look at how a panicked emergency fundraiser in 1961 evolved into this massive civic machine.
And more importantly, how it physically transforms the Arlington community today for, the people who actually live there.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this by going back to 1961, because I think that origin story perfectly explains the DNA of the whole operation.
It really does. Because back then, they weren't even the Boys and Girls Clubs yet. It was the Arlington Boys Club.
Right. They were this small, mostly sports-centered guidance organization, and they primarily served middle and low-income boys, but they were staring down this massive fiscal cliff.
Yeah, it was the end of their financial year, and the coffers were just completely dry.
They desperately needed an immediate cash injection just to keep the lights on. I mean, just to keep the doors open.
So necessity forces innovation, right? A woman named Mrs. Elmo White, working with a group of volunteers.
Mostly wives of the board members, I
Yeah,
think.
they essentially had to manufacture capital out of thin air. So they recruited six local high school girls to solicit donations and sell tickets to a black tie affair.
They leveraged the only resource they really had in abundance, which was their community networks.
Exactly. And the original concept was purely transactional. These six young women would go out, tap into local businesses, and whoever brought in the most revenue would be crowned Miss Cinderella.
Kind of as a goodwill ambassador.
Yeah. It was designed as a one-time emergency tourniquet, just a quick fix.
But the financial return was so immediate and just so overwhelming that the board of directors instantly recognized they had stumbled onto a sustainable revenue model.
Right. They voted to make it an annual event immediately. And that birthed a 65-year continuous tradition.
Okay, hold on though. I'm looking at this history and I have to push back on the premise here just a little
Okay,
bit.
let's hear it.
You're describing an event where teenage girls compete to sell the most tickets to wear a crown. Even with the financial success, isn't this essentially just a glorified beauty pageant?
I mean, I get why you'd say that.
Like, it sounds like a high school bake sale on steroids.
Yeah.
Whoever's parents buy the most cookies gets to wear the plastic tiara for the night.
Well, on the surface, the optics certainly lean into that mid-century pageant trope. I won't deny that.
Right.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, looking at the actual mechanics detailed in the sources reveals a highly structured civic mobilization.
How so?
Well, by 1967, under the leadership of Mrs. Adolph Reinhardt, the Ladies Auxiliary of the Arlington Boys Club was officially formed. And they didn't just throw a party once a year. They built an operational partnership with the board of directors that the program notes is completely unique among boys and girls clubs across the entire country. They transitioned from ad hoc fundraisers to literal project managers.
Oh, wow. Which means they act almost like a localized infrastructure bank.
That's a great way to put it.
Because when you read the historical impact listed in the program, they aren't just cutting a giant check for abstract overhead and walking away. There is a literal catalog of physical infrastructure they've spearheaded.
Oh, absolutely. They developed entire branches like the Cromer and North branches.
They funded a mobile clubhouse.
Yes, and they built the Arlington Life Shelter branch.
And a basic needs center at the East Branch. I mean, they renovated the Dan Cerna Club, bought buses, and even funded a Feeding the Future delivery vehicle.
Right, and think about what that actually entails.
Yeah.
Procurement and infrastructure development at that scale require serious operational logistics.
It's not just writing a check.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Buying a delivery vehicle or building a basic needs center means navigating zoning, managing contractors, arranging long-term maintenance, handling insurance, all of that.
So the Ladies Auxiliary provides intense hands-on assistance to execute these projects. The Cinderella Ball is really merely the funding mechanism for a much larger year-round operational apparatus.
You've nailed it.
Well, if the Auxiliary is the infrastructure bank, the young women competing for the crown are essentially the venture capitalists driving the revenue.
That's exactly what they are.
And looking at the 18 candidates running for the 2026 crown, they completely shatter that passive beauty pageant stereotype. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, their resumes are unbelievable.
We are talking about teenagers with resumes that read like applications to elite medical schools. Take Lillian Kirk, for instance.
Right, from Arlington High School.
Yeah, she's a junior playing trumpet across three different bands. But her core narrative is that she is a two-time leukemia survivor. And she channels that profound personal trauma into childhood cancer awareness advocacy. She actually has plans to become a pediatric oncology nurse and eventually a nurse anesthetist.
Which is incredibly driven. And then consider a candidate like Jocelyn Mayo, a sophomore at Nolan Catholic High School.
Oh yeah, her stats are wild.
She maintains a 100.6 GPA in exclusively advanced placement classes.
100.6? I didn't even know that was possible.
Right. And she practices Taekwondo and recently completed a neuroscience and psychology summer camp with the National Student Leadership Conference.
And doesn't she also crochet?
Yes. She spends her free time crocheting baby blankets for local hospitals. And she intends to pursue a PhD or MD to become a neuroscience researcher.
Let's just look at the mechanics of what a candidate like Jocelyn is actually doing during this campaign. Because she isn't just standing outside a grocery store asking for spare change.
Not at all.
Translating a 100.6 GPA and a neuroscience background into a philanthropic pitch requires synthesizing complex information, you know?
Absolutely. They have to identify high-value corporate or private donors, manage a schedule of events, and execute a sophisticated local fundraising drive.
They are running intense, real-world campaigns.
They are essentially acting as campaign managers for their own micro-charities.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ecosystem surrounding these candidates recently underwent a massive structural shift.
Right, the escorts.
Yes. Historically, the young men involved in these types of events, the escorts functioned purely as set dressing.
Basically, their job was to rent a tuxedo, walk a candidate down the aisle, and stand quietly in the background while the girls did all the work.
Exactly. But in 2025, the Ladies Auxiliary launched a pilot program to completely dismantle that passive dynamic.
The Cinderfella Escort Program.
I love that name.
It's great. And the 2025 pilot was apparently so successful that for 2026, it is fully integrated into the DNA of the event.
They looked at these young men, guys like Ethan Boone, Benjamin Chapa, and Zachary Clark, and decided to give them a literal seat at the table.
Changing that dynamic alters the entire gender ecosystem of local philanthropy, doesn't it?
It really does. Instead of showing up just for the photos, these escorts are locked into an 8-week intensive program leading up to the ball.
8 weeks?
Yeah. The source material emphasizes that they stand shoulder to shoulder with their candidates. They are tasked with spreading the word, raising funds alongside the young women, attending planning events,
and physically rolling up their sleeves to volunteer at the clubs.
Exactly.
This transforms the entire event into something resembling a high-stakes startup incubator.
A startup incubator is a highly accurate framework for understanding this, I think.
Right. You take these teenagers, pair them up, and hand them a massive financial and operational goal. To survive those 8 weeks, they have to rapidly acquire hard skills under pressure.
Finance, event planning, time management.
Donor relations, public speaking. I mean, the 2025 Miss Cinderella, Reese Riley, explicitly highlights gaining those exact real-world proficiencies in her outgoing letter in the program.
It's an incubator, but instead of trying to launch a tech app, they're trying to scale a community center.
Wow, that's a great point.
And this evolution, bringing the young men into the fold as active, sweating stakeholders rather than passive observers, illustrates exactly why this organization has survived for 66 years.
Because it adapts.
Exactly. By empowering teenagers to take genuine operational ownership of a massive project, they are manufacturing a pipeline.
Right. They're training the next generation of board members, organizers, and philanthropists before they even graduate high school. Well, if these teenagers are the engine, we really need to look at who they are actually driving this for.
The beneficiaries.
Yes. So what does this all mean for them? The program features remarks from Daphne Barlow, the president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Tarrant County.
And she makes a really vital point in there.
She does. She points out that for many of the children they serve, the club functions as a literal home away from home. It provides academic, vocational, social, and recreational safety nets that simply wouldn't exist otherwise.
Because the physical infrastructure we discussed earlier, the mobile clubhouses, the basic needs centers, it only matters if it translates into human development.
Right. Concrete impact.
The true return on investment for that $16.2 million is found in the individual trajectories of the youth utilizing those facilities.
And there is no better embodiment of that ROI than Jemiah G.
Oh, her story is incredible.
She is the 2026 Youth of the Year for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Tarrant County, which is an incredibly prestigious title that she remarkably also held in 2025.
Back to back.
Yeah. She's a high school member of the Cromer branch, and analyzing her trajectory shows the compounding interest of community investment.
Because she only joined the club in May of 2023.
Exactly. And instead of just absorbing resources, she immediately began organizing. She founded and coaches a cheerleading team for the club's basketball league.
She leads a morning boogie dance session during the summer.
Yes.
What's fascinating here is the mechanisms of her involvement. A cheer team and a morning dance session, those are micro communities.
Right.
She is taking the macro structure of the Boys and Girls Club and creating localized pockets of engagement and leadership within it.
And she didn't stop there. She leveraged this platform to travel to Washington, D.C., meeting with legislators to advocate for Texas youth on a national stage.
At her age, that's just phenomenal.
I want to read a direct quote from Jemiah in the program because it strips away all the corporate charity speak and gets to the core of the mechanism.
Go for it.
She says, being a club member is like someone opening a door for you and then giving you every single key to new doors ahead. And every key has a lesson.
That is just, it's so profound.
It really is.
And the most profound part of her story is how she is taking those keys and forging new ones for others.
Yes.
The source material details her deep passion for mental health awareness. Driven by a personal loss, she isn't stopping at just advocacy. She is actively working to launch her own nonprofit designed to provide peer-to-peer mental health support for teens.
She recognized a gap in support outside of regular club hours and just decided to build a structure to fill it herself.
Exactly.
Oh, and she plans to study architecture at Louisiana State University. So when you look at Jemiah, you realize that 18 candidates aren't just raising money to pay the electric bill or buy a delivery truck.
Right. They're funding the capacity for a kid like Jemiah to launch her own mental health nonprofit.
It is a brilliant symmetry, isn't it? You have high schoolers utilizing their networks to raise millions of dollars specifically to give other high schoolers the safety and resources to become change makers in their own right.
It's a closed loop system of empowerment. But, you know, that symmetry brings us to a crucial structural tension within the event itself.
Okay, the scholarships.
Yes. We know Reese Riley is handing over the 2026 crown tonight to the candidate who generated the most revenue.
Right.
But relying purely on a raw financial metric creates an inherent vulnerability.
How so?
Well, if an organization only rewards the teenager who raises the most money, they risk simply rewarding the teenager with the wealthiest parents or the most affluent social network.
Right. It just becomes a wealth contest.
Exactly.
But this is where the Ladies Auxiliary implements what I look at as a kind of corporate firewalling. They recognized that tension decades ago. So alongside the fundraising crown, there's a completely separate layer to this ecosystem, the scholarship program.
Yes.
Let me make sure I have this straight. If I'm a candidate and I bring in the highest dollar amount, I don't automatically win the biggest scholarship.
Yeah, not at all. In fact, your fundraising total has absolutely zero impact on your scholarship eligibility.
That's amazing.
Back in 1983, the Auxiliary instituted a two-fold scholarship program that physically separates the sales metrics from the character metrics. Mm-hmm. They utilize a completely blind evaluation process.
Blind meaning they don't know who they're evaluating.
Right. Several days before the fundraising totals are even finalized, a panel of three or more Auxiliary members evaluates the candidates. The applications are coded, meaning the panel has no idea whose file they are reading.
Wow.
And they award the Catherine A. Lotzenheiser Scholarship, which is a $6,000 first place prize.
And the Lotzenheiser Scholarship is named after a legend in the organization, right? She joined in 1983 and chaired the scholarship committee for 23 continuous years.
Exactly. And there are also second and third place scholarships of $4,000 and $2,000 sponsored by First Rate Inc.
Because the application is coded, the panel is forced to evaluate the candidates based strictly on academic achievement, extracurricular involvement, and letters of recommendation. It completely neutralizes the advantage of a wealthy network.
This raises an important question about how we incentivize behavior. This is essentially a masterclass in applied behavioral economics.
Right, because the foundational rule of organizational behavior is you get what you measure.
Exactly. If you only measure and reward the ability to solicit donations, you incentivize networking and aggressive salesmanship.
Which, to be fair, are highly valuable skills.
They are, but they do not encompass the entirety of civic leadership. By instituting this blind process, the Ladies Auxiliary is making a profound structural statement.
They are decoupling money from character. And they go even further to reward hands-on service, too, because beyond the academic scholarships, there is the Carol H. Zimmer Award.
Named for another woman who served for 23 years.
Right, and that honors the specific enthusiasm and spirit of a candidate. But the one that really highlights this firewalling concept is the Volunteer Service Award.
That's a newer one, isn't it?
Yeah, instituted in 2020 for the 60th anniversary and sponsored by Arlington Orthopedic Associates, or AOA.
Right, and the AOA Award is purely metrics-based, but it utilizes a totally different currency.
Yeah.
Time.
Yes.
It specifically recognizes the candidate who physically volunteered the highest number of hours at the Boys and Girls Clubs during her campaign.
It rewards the unglamorous baseline labor that actual community organizing requires.
Exactly. So the event is structurally perfectly balanced.
Yeah. On one side of the firewall, you have a ruthless, highly efficient venture capital drive competing for the Miss Cinderella crown.
And on the other side, completely shielded from the financial data, you have a system that rewards academic rigor, raw volunteer hours, and emotional intelligence.
They are signaling to these teenagers that their personal integrity and their physical labor are just as valuable to the community as their financial leverage.
And that dual incentive structure prevents the event from devolving into a pure popularity or wealth contest.
It ensures that the pipeline of future leaders they are building produces well-rounded, empathetic project managers, not just fundraisers.
Absolutely.
Which brings this entire deep dive into the source material directly back to you listening to this right now.
Yes, because whether you are navigating local politics in Arlington, Texas, or trying to organize a community initiative halfway across the globe, there's a lesson here.
The Cinderella Charity Ball is so much more than a local human interest story about teenagers in formal wear. It is a blueprint for how a community can sustain, scale, and structurally protect a philanthropic effort across generations.
The ultimate takeaway is the power of reverse engineering.
Right.
The founders and subsequent leaders of the Cinderella Ball took a very traditional mid-century social format, the debutante-style presentation, and systematically rebuilt its internal mechanics.
They adapted it over 66 years. They integrated young men as active stakeholders, built blind scholarship firewalls, and funded massive physical infrastructure.
They looked past the surface of the cocktail hour and built a real engine.
You see the mobile clubhouses, the basic needs centers, and you see leaders like Jemiah G being given the keys to open doors for others.
All funded by the grueling campaign work of candidates like Lillian Kirk and Jocelyn Mayo, and escorts like Ethan Boone.
This leaves us with a critical question to examine in our own lives, right? Look at the structures operating in your own town. What outdated traditions, social clubs, or seemingly relic-like gatherings in your community could be entirely repurposed?
Exactly. If a 1960s emergency ticket-selling drive can be reverse-engineered into a $16.2 million youth leadership incubator, what is the hidden machinery for good sitting dormant in your own backyard?
It is a phenomenal question to take with you. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep looking past the surface of things. Keep questioning the mechanics of how your community operates. And we will see you next time.